This is OTB AM.
Let's tell you something about Nathan now. I think he said the other night, I was listening to his commentary, actually, I got the first half of his commentary the other night. Great reader of a stat, he's just not a great reader of the game. And that's not something that I thought about. I was thinking it when I was driving. I was thinking, he's a great man for a stat, but, oh, come on.
OTB AM, Ireland's only sports breakfast show, weekdays from 7:30 AM, only on OTB Sports Radio. Live 24/7 on the OTB Sports app. The OTB Podcast Network.
The Off the Ball Podcast on OTB Sports Radio, Ireland's first and only sports radio station.
Now, you're very welcome back. So we're turning to snooker. The 2021 World Championship well underway now. We're at the quarterfinal stages. Final on the 3rd of May. Very happy to say the 1997 World Champion himself, Ken Doherty, is with us. Hey, Ken.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
I'm very well. I won't mention the Glazers to you.
No, please don't. No, definitely not. I'm glad that's all sorted anyway. It was, I just thought it was greed at the highest order. So it's good that the fans and everybody came together, and that's in the can now, as they say, thankfully, you know.
Yeah, it's rare the billionaires in life lose.
Yeah, it's very true. Yeah. Well, it just shows you the power of the supporters, because no matter how much money you have, like, the most important people in the club are the supporters themselves, you know, and they've shown that. And it was a rude awakening for the Glazers and all the owners across the world.
So we're well underway at the Crucible. I see of the quarterfinal lineup, 6 of the 8 are former champions. That's quite a healthy dividend. How has the tournament been thus far? Obviously, there was the shock of O'Sullivan being beaten in the second round.
O'Sullivan, it was a big shock. Yeah, he lost to Anthony McGill 13-12. Of course, Anthony McGill was semi-finalist here last year, losing out by the odd frame to Corin Wilson. It's a really strong lineup. Sure, Bingham's in there. You got Trump against Sean Murphy. You've got Mark Selby against Mark Williams. That's a fascinating game. I was commentating on that today. That was absolutely fantastic. And you've got Neil Robertson in there as well, who on form, you would say, coming into this tournament, was a slight favourite, even though Judd Trump has had an amazing season, winning 5 ranking tournaments. So, yeah, there's some really big hitters in there. It's been great snooker. And the most important thing as well for the tournament, Joe, is that the crowds are back in. You know, it's going to be a full capacity crowd on the Tour de May, on the final. Mm. And there's been 30%, 50%, and it'll be up to 75% for the semi-finals, and then, of course, 100% for the finals. So that's the great news. This is like a pilot scheme back by the government. Everybody's getting tested. They have to come with their test already, negative, and then they get a lateral flow test before they actually can come into the Crucible tier. And there hasn't been one positive case, which is great news, but so happy to see the crowds back in the arena, you know?
Great, yeah, they've done that really well, it seems. And I presume for the players, it makes an enormous difference. It must be, you go through the qualifying rounds at times, and I know you try it again this year.
Yeah, yeah.
To go from playing in front of fans and whatever electricity they bring to no fans must have a huge impact on you as a player.
Of course it does. It has an impact on everybody. You know, the fact that there's nobody there. They provide the inspiration, to all the players. And to have them back, you know, for a whole season, even though the season has gone ahead, like they put on new tournaments and stuff like that, to keep the players busy. Worst Nuke have done a great job, but they can't have fans in. And for the first time since the World Championship last year, there's fans back in. And that must be a huge boost for everybody, not just the players. For World Snooker, all the people backstage, everybody, even, you know, the TV company, the BBC, the Eurosport, you know, and even for us as pundits, just to see crowds and the reaction. And you can't beat sport without the, you know, the supporters. And it's great to have them back.
Ken, was there anything in Ronnie O'Sullivan's recent form to suggest a shock was on the cards like this?
I didn't think he was going to defend his title, to be honest. He came into this World Championship off a really heavy defeat against Neil Robertson in the Players' Championship in Wales. He's lost in 5 finals this year, hasn't won a tournament. And I just felt, even though he brought Steve Peters here with him, he looked very focused, he looked very determined, and he agonisingly wants to get that 7 World Championship trophy under his belt to equal Stephen Hendry's record. He sits on 6 along with Steve Davis and Ray Reardon. But he really wants just to cap everything off. I mean, he deserves it, to be honest. And I think he will still come back and possibly get that seventh. I think he will, because he's still a fit young man, and he's still got a little bit of time. But I think his career deserves a seventh world championship for sure, and I'm sure he'll be back. But this year, he just wasn't. I don't think he was completely ready for it, you know.
Right. To lose in five finals is some going.
Yeah, it is. I mean, he's been consistent, but he's had some heavy defeats, you know, to Mark Selby, 9-3. He's lost a tough one to Judd Trump. He lost a close one to Judd Trump, but he lost a very one-sided affair to Judd Trump. And, of course, as I said, 10-4 to Nate Robertson in the last one. He lost to Jordan Brown in the final of the Welsh Open, 9-8. Yeah, but just hasn't played sort of to the standard that you normally see from Ronnie O'Sullivan. Okay. So maybe there was something missing. He was always talking about cue actions and going on about that he wasn't happy with it. And I think it's just sort of caught up with him, you know. Right.
Would snooker be a sport? Because golfers, it's funny, just because you say that about cue actions and stuff. Golfers are always losing and finding their swings. You know, it's quite a precise sport. Would snooker players lose their cue action from time to time or no?
Oh, yeah, definitely, yeah. I mean, a lot of the players would have coaches and, you know, it is very technical, snooker. Not as technical as golf, because there's a lot more moving parts in golf, but certainly it's very, very technical, snooker, because you've got to stay still on the shot, you've got to keep your head still, you've got to push the cue in a straight line, you've got to hit the exact part of the cue ball to get the right reaction. So there's a lot of things that can go wrong in snooker, and it can be very technical, and if your cue action and particularly your confidence is not 100%, but if your technique is not right, you know, you've got no chance.
And would all players, again, to extend the golfing analogy, say golfers are always fighting a certain miss, a certain tendency they're always compensating for in some way. Would you, for as an example, would you have always fought something in your cue action or a tendency?
Yeah. I've been fighting tendencies in my game for the best part of 30 years, you know? And I'm still fighting them, you know. But yeah, you will be fighting tendencies all the time. You're always trying to strike the cue ball in the middle. You're always trying to get a pure strike on it, and you're always trying to find that consistency, you know. And Ronnie O'Sullivan has, you know, believe it or not, had a few different cue actions in his career, and has dealt with different coaches in his career, and is still doing it. You know what I mean? He's still striving for perfection, and that's what makes him such a great, along with the great talent that he's been possessed with. You know.
So, what would you have fought, someone who knows your game and that you would trust, if you were to turn to them when things weren't going well, what would they say to you? Oh, you're doing that thing again, Ken. What was your go-to?
Yeah. You would be sort of cutting across the ball, or
right.
In my career, like my friend Pat Covey, he would say, like, you're lifting your head. Well, I used to lift my head off the cue quite a bit. It was just a sort of mannerism, a fault that I had, you know.
Yeah.
And of course, when you lift your head off the cue, you know, you're not keeping it online and such. So that was my miss all the time.
Very interesting. And I know you gave qualifying a go. There were, 128 odd participants, and only 16 will ultimately reach the main stage of the competition. I know you're desperate to get back one more time, I was reading.
Yeah, I'd love to play one more time for sure. Yeah, it would be nice, you know. But if it's not to be, you know, it's not to be. You know, at least, you know, the Crucible has been good to me over the years. I've had some great memories there. I've had some tough losses as well, you know, but of course, winning in 97 was the pinnacle, you know, but losing the final in 98 and, of course, in 03 to Williams, so narrowly 18-16. But, you know, I have a lot of great memories in the Crucible, and it would be nice to play here one more time. The last time I played, I came out when I kissed the carpet. I was so relieved to get back, you know. But if it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen. It won't stop me from giving it a go in any way. If it doesn't happen, as I said, the memories will last forever, John.
Oh, for sure. Listen, amazing memories. Mm. And how is the game, and how much practice time would you put in comparison with 10, 20 years ago?
Yeah, I mean, you don't get as much time as you probably did like along all those years ago. But I love the game. I mean, I love competing in it. We're going to be competing in the World Seniors here the week after the World Championship. So I'm going to be competing with the likes of Jimmy White and Hendry, and I'm playing Joe Johnson. So that'll be good fun, you know, and that'll be nice to get out and play. But I love the game, and I'll always love the game. And, you know, and that's why I still love doing the, you know, the other stuff, being at the Crucible here with the BBC. say and doing the punditry, I absolutely love that as well, because if I didn't, I'd be sitting at home watching it like you you know, just as a snooker fan. So it's been a great sport to be involved in.
Well, the TV must keep you very close to it and feeling a part of it.
Yeah, it does. Of course it does. Yeah. And, you know, like these guys that I'm working with, they're like snooker family, you know. I've sort of grown up playing with them and sort of grown up sort of still working with them and, you know, having fun with them and, you know, and they're a big part of my life, you know. So, it's good. It's good fun. It's not like work. We just have such great fun. We talk about something that we know a lot about and just have fun doing it, you know. And they're good guys, you know, the snooker fraternity and the guys that I work with in the TV, you know, they're great lads. Like, you know.
I was having a look at the world rankings, Ken. So, I mean, Judd Trump is, what, 31 now. You've got Ronnie still very much there. Neil Robertson, Mark Selby, John Higgins, Sean Murphy, Ding Junhui. Ding's 34 now. Mark Williams. I mentioned John Higgins, I think. Mark Allen. I mean, if you'd gone into a coma 10, 15 years ago and woken up now, you'd be kind of thinking the snooker hasn't transformed.
No, it hasn't.
What's that about? Because I know Ronnie had his thing about young players, but I don't know if that's quite fair, is it?
Yeah. I think, you know, it hasn't changed a lot at the top. I mean, you've got that young Chinese sort of protege now that's come true, Yan Bingtao. He's only 20 and he won the Masters this year. So he'd probably be the youngest in the top 16. But it hasn't changed much in the top, but it's changed an awful lot down through the body of the 128, and particularly the guys that are coming in at the very, very bottom. You know, there's a lot of young guys. They're able to turn pro now at 15, 16. And, it's very difficult for them to break through. They've only got a couple of years on the circuit. But I think over the next, like, you know, 5 or 10 years, you're going to see a lot more younger guys coming to the fore and challenging the likes of the top 16.
Right. Because I read a piece in the Sunday Times at the start of the championship, and a lot of the players were of the opinion that the much talked about Chinese takeover, say the Ding Junhui kids who grew up watching Ding, that they are coming.
Yeah, they are coming. Yeah, they're taking a little bit more time. But you have to understand, like, you know, they have to travel a lot, be away from their homes and the family. So it's difficult in the beginning when you're so young that you have to get over that. But you have to, I suppose, make these sort of decisions and sacrifices if you're going to achieve anything in any sport. So, they are coming. We have, 23 Chinese professionals on the tour now. If you go back 10 or 15 years ago, you may have had half of that. So every year there's going to be a few more. But there's also, you know, young kids coming from Europe and different parts of the world. We have a Brazilian this year, but younger kids. We need more, though, you know, from Ireland. You know, a lot of the same clubs closing now. It's very, very difficult to get them back in. I think that's part of the problem as well. As new clubs, it's hard to keep open with the prices of property and stuff like that. And then, of course, you've got kids who are on the phones and on YouTube and, you know, social media and stuff like that. It's very, very difficult for fathers to take them away from playing games of Fortnite and Call of Duty and stuff like that. Yeah. Probably that you play, Joe, yourself. You know?
I'm an old man like you now. Funny, I was that generation I was not a good snooker player. Like, football and Gaelic and tennis were more of my sports. But right through my secondary school years, it was down the quarry and playing snooker. Like, the quarry, that was where our snooker club was, and it was just a thing. I don't know, was that happening to the same extent, but it was very much everybody played snooker kind of a time.
And it was the same for me when I was growing up. You know, in the late 70s, early 80s, you know, we just couldn't wait to get around to the snooker club. We didn't have all the facilities and the different at our disposal that kids have now, you know. So
Not to make you feel old, but when I was in my first year in secondary school was 97, so it couldn't have been bigger. It was huge. You know, like, it was massive. Everybody was obsessed with it. So I've no sense of the landscape now. Even around Dublin, I don't know, are there snooker halls knocking around?
Yeah, I mean, there is. I mean, you know, I have one up in Terranure myself, but it's still they're not open, obviously, at the moment, but they're still difficult to attract a lot of the younger crowds. I think, you know, like, it's just it's difficult times, you know, and that's what I fear for the next, like, you know, maybe in 10 or 20 years, where a lot of the younger kids got, we don't want, as good as like China has been to snooker, we don't want all the players coming from China.
No.
And filling up all the spaces. So we need to have help as well. I think going into schools, like with snooker tables going as an alternative sport would be a big help. Backing from the government would be a big help as well, because otherwise you'll see a lot of the snooker clubs there closing around the country if it doesn't get some sort of help at government level as well.
And do the lads, Ken, from the UK say it's similar over there to Ireland?
It's similar, yeah. It is quite similar, you know. I don't want to paint a bad picture, because snooker is in a really good place commercially, you know, around the world. It's never been in a better place, you know. Barry Hearn has done a fantastic job over the last 10 or so years. So it's really... I mean, before Barry Hearn took over, we had 6 ranking tournaments. He could play in 20 ranking tournaments now. So it's grown exponentially, but in different parts of the world. But
yes,
in the UK and Ireland, that's where we still want to have a lot of kids coming through. Like.
No, for sure. And actually, you've taken me exactly where I was going to talk to you next, on Barry Hearn. So he is now leaving the World Snooker Tour behind. Steve Dawson is coming in as tour chairman. But as you rightly say, business is booming. So 2010, there were 6 ranking events and there was 3.5 million sterling in prize money across
those six
events. Whereas now, I read, we're up to 30 tournaments per year with 15 million sterling prize money across the events. That is an unbelievable success. By the way, the 2010s, the first half of them, like global recession had broken out. This is an unbelievable success story.
Yeah. It is an amazing success story. And it's down to Barry Hearn.
Right.
For sure. You know, and his, you know, team at Matchroom and what they've done an incredible job. You know, now he's stepping down. You know, he's over 70. He's been involved in the game for so long with Steve Davis, of course. From 1981 when he won his first world championship. So, he's done an amazing job. But he has a great team behind him. That Matchroom Sport have done an incredible job, not only with snooker, but with darts and other sports and boxing, of course, as well. So he's got a great team. And Steve Dawson, who's his friend and been in his accountant for 30 years, he's going to step into the helm for Barry Hearn and take over. So I think it'll be a seamless process. And I think the game will still be in great hands. And there'll be more and more tournaments to come, I'm sure, and spread far and wide across different parts of the globe.
How has the game moved on, you know, in terms of styles? We mentioned a lot of the same players are still involved. So maybe they're all still playing in exactly the same way they were 10, 15 years ago. Like, have things like speed of play changed? Are players more aggressive now?
Oh, much more. Yeah, much more. I mean, the players at the top, I mean, the century breaks. I mean, O'Sullivan has gone over 1,100 centuries. Stephen Hendry was the top for quite some time, like 15 or so years with 775.
Okay.
But now you're having like guys like Trump and Robertson who are making 100 centuries a season, wow. You know, like, wow. Whereas some guys that I played with, you know, back in the 90s hadn't made 100 centuries in their career.
That's extraordinary.
You know, I mean, and these are guys that would have won ranking tournaments. They wouldn't have had 100 centuries in their career. So it's amazing how much and how aggressive and how sort of stronger these lads are playing at, and such a level that it's really, and also down the list. So it's not only the guys at the top, but all the way down the list, making centuries, and the standard has gone up, as I said, exponentially.
Wow. How many centuries have you to your name?
360 or something like that.
And these lads now are knocking out 100 a season.
Well, the likes of Trump, Dale Robertson made 100 in one season. He was the first one ever to do it, and Judd Trump followed it the following year. So they've really broken the barrier in that regard, you know. But yeah, I mean, these guys, I think Trump is up to like 800 centuries. Now, don't forget, I mean, they're playing in like 30 tournaments, so it's a little bit different than playing in maybe 10 tournaments. But at the same time, the standard is quite incredible. It's great to see, you know, and I think we're going to have a, a wonderful championship this year. You know, it's going to be interesting to see who's going to lift that wonderful cup on Bank Holiday Monday.
Mm. So as you said, in the quarterfinals at the moment, we have McGill against Bingham, we have Selby against Williams, we have in the bottom half of the draw Neil Robertson against Kieran Wilson, and we have Judd Trump and Sean Murphy. And that one's very tight, that game. You said you were watching a bit of Selby Williams. Selby's in control, in control of that one, Seth, by the looks of things.
Yeah, he's 6-2 up. Yes, he's playing superbly well. They're in the top half of the draw, and the winner of Selby Williams will play Bingham or Anthony McGill. And of course, the winner of Robertson Wilson down the bottom will play the winner of Morphy and Trump. So Selby's playing incredible. Bingham and McGill is quite tight, and Wilson and Robertson. Robertson holds a 5-3 lead there. Morphy, I think, and Trump finished at 4-4. That was on the other table. Yeah, that was on the other table while I was commentating on Williams and Selby. But Selby looked back to his almost imperious best. Yeah, right. Very, very good.
Right, okay. So Selby maybe to come out of that top half of the draw anyway.
I'd say Selby in the final, and the semi-final will be between Morphy, Judd and Robertson and Corin Wilson. I can't pick a winner out of that because the four players are playing superbly well. So on form, you would say Robertson, Trump in the semis, but you never know. Hopefully, Sean, who's a good pal of mine, hopefully he can get through.
Yeah. Who do you like watching now, Ken, these days? Who are your favourite players?
I love watching Selby. I love watching Trump. Of course, O'Sullivan, Robertson. I like watching them all. It's all a contrast and a different styles, you know, and sometimes you like a guy who's a bit more open, playing a guy who's a little bit more conservative, trying to trap him. And, you know, they're the sort of the interesting battles and how they can sort of overcome one another, you know.
Mm.
It's not all about scoring all the time. Like, you know, they didn't call it snooker for nothing. So you have to have a bit of sort of ring craft, as they say. And you have to be able to sort of, it's sort of like they call it a game of chess with balls, you know, and that's what snooker is like at times. So you have to have, as well as your scoring pair, you've got to be very, very clever in the way you go about trying to trap your opponent and trying to get him into situations that he's uncomfortable with and then taking advantage of
because it's kind of, it's a bit reductive of me to just ask about centuries when strategy is so important. Who are the real intelligent strategists out there now?
I think the best ones that I've ever played against was Davis, of course, in the early days. Then sort of John Higgins came along.
Yeah.
And now you've got Mark Selby, Mark Williams as well. They're they play a very, very clever game. Tough, real tough match players. And I love battling against them, like, you know, all the time. They really put you to the test.
So, come here, are we putting a few quid on you to win the seniors, the champions event, are we?
Well, you won't get much odds. I'm probably favourite behind myself and Stephen or Jimmy. But yeah, I should have won it last year. Threw it away.
Right.
Collapsed like a cheap tent in the final from 4-0 up, losing to Jimmy 5-4. So hopefully I can rectify that this year, you know.
Okay, very good. Well, listen, you've been great with your time. Great to check in and get your thoughts on it all, Ken. Thanks so much. Take care of yourself.
Pleasure, Joe. Yeah, you look after yourself.
All
enjoy
right.
The rest of the snooker. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
The Off the Ball podcast on OTB Sports Radio, Ireland's first and only sports radio station.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.